Most wore clothes, though a few were stark naked. The clothes were of all ages and countries, and were mostly torn and ragged. We were able to perceive each other in the murky air, but we could not see the country through which we ran. We ran out of the darkness into the darkness, knowing nothing, caring nothing, if we could but escape from the whips of our masters. And behind us rose that wild chorus, "How like you, your master? Our burden is heavy, our reward small. On forever. There is no hope for you. You are damned forever. This is the unpardonable sin, for you have worshipped the devil instead of God. No, there is no God. Men do but beguile themselves when they say there is a God. There is no such thing as good except as the opposite of evil. Evil really exists, good does not. There is no such thing as a good man. Christ is a myth. We are the only beings who are real. Despair. Weep. Your good days are over. It were better for you if there had been no such thing as life after death. We served you in the world, now you must serve us in turn." These and constant other taunts and jeers greeted our ears the whole time. Most of what they said was lies, said to reduce us to utter despair, and the more dangerous because there was a certain modicum of truth in it. Gone West 122. I soon found that I was quite unable to read what was in their minds, as I had been able to do with the men in the division above. They seemed, by the mere exercise of their wills, to be able to build up a wall round their thoughts which I was quite powerless to penetrate. At length I cried to one of the devils, "Is there no way by which I can become one of the drivers instead of one of the driven?" "Yes," he cried, as he lashed me in the face, "yes, if you will go back to the division above and bring down 100 spirits. It can easily be done. Make them believe in the devils and worship them. Have the black mass, and this will soon hurl them down." "How can I return to that division?" I inquired. "One of us will quickly show you the way, but think not that you will be able to escape us when there. No, we allow you to go to do our work, and we shall know at once if you try to escape us." Gone West 123, Chapter 16. He undertakes to recruit for the devils. I was allowed to stop behind while the rest whirled on along their never-ceasing path. I looked at this malevolent being who had been deputed to guide me. He was far larger than I, and seemed made of darkness, if you can understand me. Never for 2 minutes did he look the same, not merely his face, but his whole form seemed to be constantly changing. He was robed in a long flowing robe of black, but even while I looked he became stark naked. Then he changed, and became like a goat, and even while I was struggling with my amazement he became a python. He next resumed his man's shape, man, however vile, looked as diabolical as this creature did. The face was hideous in the extreme, the eyes were oblong and glittered like a snake's, the nose was hooked like an eagle's beak, the mouth was full and armed with teeth which were pointed and almost like tusks. Malevolence and debauchery seemed stamped on his features, while his hands were almost like talons, they looked so bony. From his body darkness seemed to ooze. Again he changed and became a column of red flame, which yet gave no light, and from this awful flame came a voice, "Follow this way." We moved along thus, me and the moving column of flame. Presently out of the gloom I heard the sounds as of discordant chanting, and soon I saw what appeared to be a mountain, and, on approaching nearer, saw there was a cave, and in it many spirits. My guide assumed his semi-human form, and we entered the cave together. Here we heard the dang of cymbals and the blare of trumpets, and, the mingling with them of shrieks and cries as well as of discordant singing. Soon we saw a great throne, and in front of it a huge cauldron of what seemed like fire blazed and roared. On the throne was seated a hideous monster, and into the cauldron they were flinging little boys and girls, who screamed as if they were really burning. Of course it felt like burning, you know. "Are those really children?" I inquired. "No," he answered, "they are men and women whom the stronger will have compelled to assume that form, and then offer up in sacrifice. Every now and then some of the real devils raid the place and throw the whole lot into the furnace. No young children come here. Here are the devils." As he spoke, a wild shriek arose from the worshippers, and a band of evil spirits rushed into the temple and drove us all, save my guide, into the great cauldron. What it was that burnt, whether it was the will of the evil spirits, I don't know, but I suffered awful agonies. At length the evil spirits disappeared as swiftly as they had come, and we crawled out. The rest resumed their service, and I made my way towards my guide. He grinned ferociously and said, "Truly my yoke is heavy, is it not? It will be still more so unless you bring us a fine batch of worshippers." I will, I screamed. "But why do you want more worshippers? You only torture us when you have us. Because we hate you with an intensity of which your feeble brains have no comprehension. You think you know how to hate, but it is but a feeble imitation of that which is almost our life to us. We hate you." As he screamed these words he seemed to burst into a raging fire, and it was some time before he resumed his human shape. "Now to your work," he cried, and moved swiftly along for some time. Presently we seemed to be climbing, but whether we really did, who can say? Gone West 124. Suddenly he seized me and sprang with me into space, and next thing I realized was that I was back in the division above. I at once perceived that it was not in the city of hate that I had been placed. My evil guardian cried, "Now remember, you cannot stay here for long. Your body has become too gross even for this division of hell, and any treachery on your part will be at once punished by the most awful torments. Moreover, I shall immediately fetch you back. I cannot stay here in any comfort, but I shall know what you are doing and thinking, so beware." He had gone. With what a sigh of relief I realized it, but I foresaw that any respite would be but short. However, a brilliant idea struck me. If I succeeded in bringing back a good batch, it was likely that I should be sent out again, therefore I would try. I found that I was in the miser's country, and the great terror which haunted them was the fear that someone would rob them of their gold. Of course they had no gold, and if they had, it would not have been of the slightest use. But still their old instincts of fear and greed were still all powerful. I soon found that I could work these vices to my advantage. To some I promised that if they would worship the devil he would give them as much gold as they wanted, to the others I promised protection from the tyranny of the rest and the fear of losing all they had. By dint of much hard work I collected a nice little band, who, under my instructions, performed the Black Mass. At first the evil spirits seemed to pay but little heed to us. But, after a time, one or two of them appeared. At length, at one of the services, I noticed a sensation of being dragged, and so did all the congregation. I knew at once what it meant, though the others did not. It meant that the spiritual connection had been formed, and we were about to fall to our own place. The feeling of attraction, almost akin to the law of gravity, grew stronger and stronger, and at length we seemed to be falling. The surroundings slipped away past us, the solid ground appeared to give way, and we fell. We had indeed become too gross for even the spiritual elements of hate to hold us, and the attraction of what we had made our God drew us towards it. Gone West 125, Chapter 17. He falls into the lowest depth of hell. As soon as we reached the land of those accursed devils we were surrounded by them on every side. I looked now for my promised reward, but instead heard this from one of them, "You have acted the part of a devil and lured men to destruction, but without even the excuse that we have. We are of a different order to men and hate them, but you are of their order and have not the excuse of hating them. You have betrayed your fellow men simply for your own selfish ends. It matters nothing to us, but if you imagine you can change a man into a devil simply by aping one, you are a fool as well as a knave. Our nature and yours is different. Back with the others, you cur." I slunk back among my victims, but only for an instant, for they, furious at my treachery, which, of course, they divined, instinctively hurled themselves upon me, and tried to tear me to pieces. Then succeeded a wild nightmare, in which the demons lashed us forward, and my victims strove to tear me to pieces. I suffered the same anguish as if they had succeeded, but still lived on to suffer again and again. At length I shook myself free and fled, and they pursued. What really happened next I cannot truly describe or even remember. Like some frightful nightmare, I ran on, and, after a time, I appeared to be leaping and falling downwards. At length all deliberate motion on my part ceased, yet still I fell down, 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 and it seemed as if I should never reach the bottom. After an interminable age my downward course was stayed. I appeared to be completely immersed in some spongy mass. It was neither firm ground nor water nor even marsh. It was something which has no real counterpart on earth. It was the most tangible form of darkness I met with in all hell. Of course all the darkness of hell is tangible to spirits from even this plane. This spongy fog gradually stopped my downward passage, but I felt no firm ground beneath my feet. The same spongy mass was above and below and around, as solid above my head as below my feet. There was no sound, no sight, nothing, absolute nothingness, solitude intolerable, black despair, misery unspeakable. I felt myself at last an utter outcast, yes, indeed an outcast, cast forth alike from the society of men and devils. This was the end of all my desperate striving against fate. Oh, that ghastly silence! Utter, absolute solitude! He ceased. Gone West 126, Chapter 18, The Bottomless Pit, Letter from the Officer May 23rd. How can I convey to you the awful solitude of the lowest depth of hell? No words of mine can ever make you realize it. Nothing else could ever have broken my proud spirit as that did. Absolutely abandoned, forsaken, alone. Neither sight nor sound, not another soul, alone, absolutely alone, with one's own thoughts. They rose before me and gibed and jeered all the evil that I had ever done. I did not repent then, I did not even feel remorse, but I felt a wild, hopeless despair. These thoughts seemed to take form and shriek at me, "You are damned. Look at us. We are the things which you have begotten. What right have you for hope? All your life has been given up to evil, till not even the most abandoned will associate with you. We cannot forsake you, we would if we could." Then again came darkness, it seemed almost like annihilation. I opened my mouth to scream, but no sound came out. The darkness seemed to float in and stop it. "Their mouths shall be stopped with dust." I seemed vaguely to remember the phrase, but where it came from I did not care. Oh, that awful loneliness! I would have done anything to get back even to the whips of the evil spirits above, but it was not to be. Absolutely crushing silence. I cannot convey to you the awfulness of that solitude. You may think that the pains of the divisions above were worse, but it was not so. Ages seemed to pass, and those terrible words came ringing in my mind, "Damned eternally." Then again Dante's words, "Abandon hope, all ye who enter here." Yes, all hope. I felt it, and so for what seemed endless ages, I suffered in solitude. Suddenly a phrase came into my mind, and I grasped its full meaning, "My God, my God, why hast thou forsaken me?" He who hung upon the cross knew intuitively its awfulness and the despair of those who lay here. Forsaken of God, never till now had I understood the meaning of that sentence. It had seemed to me absurd, but now I saw as by a lightning flash he knew the sufferings of all, even those in the bottommost pit. Think what you please of the story of the crucifixion, I care not, but this I do know, that he knew of our sufferings and realized it, and he alone of all who trod this earth knew it while on it. As this thought sank in, I did not at first attach any particular meaning to it, but as time wore on, it came to me that there must be some significance in it. If he intuitively knew our sufferings, he who was all merciful must feel some shreds of pity for us. Doubtless he could not help us. As a tree falls, so shall it lie. Still, if he still lived anywhere and if I did, surely he would, he must feel pity for me. A new sensation grew by degrees. Why had I been such a fool? Why had I not tried by repentance to get out of hell? But there, what was the use? I was in hell and I could not, for hell is eternal. But I thought and thought. At any rate it was pleasanter to think of Christ than of other things. Why not go on thinking of him? I cannot say that I felt any genuine regret for my past life, but I began to feel that I had been a fool, I had wasted my chances. "Well," I cried, "I must pay the price. I shan't whine now, I never did on earth, and I'm not going to start now. But somehow that scene on Calvary seemed to haunt me. It came as a refreshing interlude amid my other thought pictures. Then there came a new thought. I remembered my mother. I wondered where she was. She died when I was quite young, but I remembered her, and could remember how she used to teach me to pray. What was it? I could not remember. Funny, I could remember everything else, but not, Gone West 127, those prayers. Strange. Well, I'd always heard that the damned could not pray, and I was damned. I did not realize it, but in a feeble sort of way I was praying, or at least yearning, after better things. This was the turning point. How I got out I will tell you later, but this was the first faint beginning. Now I win break off. I wanted to leave you with the tense of hope, not of hopelessness, for though I did not realize it, this was the beginning of better things. I had at last reached the bottom, and soon I would start on the upward path. I had gone the full course and had reached the lowest depths, and yet, His mighty arm was strong to save. Glory be to God on high. Indeed, there is no such thing as death, neither of the good nor bad, but perpetual hell would be death, for it means permanent separation from God. The Officer. Witnessed by K., May 23, 1914. Gone West 128, Chapter 19, The First Upward Step, Transvision, May 25, 1914. The officer having sat down began at once. How long I remained in that awful solitude I have no idea, but it seemed like centuries. Anyway, at length an inspiration came to me, sent, I believe, from above in answer to my inarticulate prayers. It was, turn towards God. He can help you, and no one else can. Turn towards God. It was a new idea. My whole life had consisted in turning deliberately away from Him. How could I turn towards Him even now? Yet what would I not do to get out of this awful place? Again and again my mind reverted to the idea, but how could I go towards Him? How could I get out of this awful spongy darkness? Besides, I was damned. Another idea flashed into my mind. Why not pray? I tried the Lord's Prayer, but could not manage it. I had forgotten how to pray. At length, like an inspiration, the words suddenly burst from my lips, O God, help me. Once spoken they came easier, and I repeated them again and again. What followed next, and, indeed, the whole of my process of getting out of this deepest depth, will, I am afraid, be very difficult for you to understand. It is next to impossible to find words adequate to describe these experiences. Well, the first effect of this praying was to produce what seemed like a pleasant sensation of warmth, and this warmth grew and grew until it became far too hot. Finally, I seemed to be afire. The more I prayed, the more intense grew the heat, till at length I ceased to pray, hoping it might stay the pain. But it still continued. Then I became aware of a new sensation. I seemed to be growing lighter, and gradually I realized that I was slowly rising up through the spongy darkness. What had happened was, that by praying even so feebly I had begun to burn away a little of the grossest part of my nature which had rendered my spiritual body so heavy. Thus it became too light to remain stuck in that darkness, and gradually rose and rose, till at last I saw jutting out from the darkness what seemed like a black and slippery rock at the edge of some beetling cliffs. Though this phrase would not be adequate, yet if you consider this lowest depth as a deep lake of utter darkness with forbidding cliffs all around, you will get some idea. As soon as I saw this black, slippery rock I tried to climb onto it, but slipped off again and again. By this time the burning sensation had ceased, and, encouraged by the evidence I had just received of the benefits of prayer, I tried it again. O God, help me to get out of this darkness. I had hardly done so when the lake of darkness, upon which I was now floating instead of in it, became agitated. Great waves rose up round me, and seemed as if they would engulf me. Instead, however, I was lifted up and hurled onto the rock. It was as if the dark waters would no longer contain me on their bosom, and therefore cast me ashore. I have little doubt that in part this was the case. You see, bad as I still was yet too good to remain there now, and so was cast up on the shore of the second lowest division. The darkness was still intense, but not so tangible, but when I commenced to investigate my surroundings, I must admit my heart sank. The rock seemed to jut out like a table from a high cliff, and at first I could find no path by which to climb it. Remembering how useful prayer had been before, I again essayed its benefits. Gone West 129, for some time nothing happened, and I began to lose heart. But at length my sight seemed to become clearer, for I was able to detect a hole in the cliff a short distance to the left of the flat rock. I found that I could just reach it with one hand, and having tried many parts of the cliff with my foot, at length found a sort of step or hole broken or cut in the cliff, into which I placed my foot. After several more desperate struggles I reached the cave's entrance, and on climbing into it found that, after running some distance inland, it opened into a kind of narrow gully. Now I'm afraid that all this must sound fearfully physical, but you must bear in mind that to us superphysical beings superphysical rock seems almost physical, and, in any case, when describing it to you we cannot convey the finer distinctions for which there are no words or symbols. This fact must be fairly intelligible to you, for look how natural in many ways is this spirit world to which you are permitted to come. By means of infinite toil and effort I was able slowly to climb up this gully, and after a while reached a spot some way up the cliff. Here I found a ledge of rock which ran along the side of the cliff for some distance, and followed it. In due course this, too, ended, and I almost gave way to despair. Had I struggled so far only to fail at last? I crouched down and thought, but as I could discover no way out, I began to pray again, but without much hope. However, the mere action of praying seemed to soothe my troubled spirit, and at length, encouraged by it, I rose and again searched for a way out. Suddenly there was a roar like thunder, and a mass of rock fell forward from the face of the cliff and jammed across the narrow gully close by where the path had broken off. This made a steep, sloping bridge. I could not see from where I stood whether the further end of the bridge led onto another path or ledge, but I felt sure that it had fallen in answer to my prayers. With infinite pains I scrambled on to this rough bridge. Several times I feared that I should pitch into the chasm below, but still I struggled on. At length I reached the top of the sloping stone bridge, and found that the chasm wall on the other side was more like squeeze than a sheer precipice. Up this I painfully struggled, often slipping back, but still persevering. My iron will stood me in good stead in this predicament. At length it was done, and I crawled onto comparatively level ground, rough and bouldery though it was, with a sigh of relief. I was back once more in the second division of hell. At the same time a new fear seized me. Should I again see those devils? But nothing happened, no one came, and in time a new terror presented itself to my mind. Had I, after all, not left the lowest depth, was I still in that awful solitude? For a moment despair gripped me. Were all these painful efforts in vain? Were the apparent answers to my prayers a mockery, the scorn of an angry God who would never be appeased? But soon other thoughts came. The darkness, though still here, was not the same, it was not tangible, it was the darkness of the second division. So again came hope. Now you must leave us. Gone West 130, Chapter 20, Back in the Second Division, Vision, The Officer's Narrative. June 1, 1914. After greeting me, the officer proceeded at once with his narrative. I scrambled painfully over the stony ground without any particular object in view save to get away from the crevasse up which I had crawled. This journey continued for some time, until in the distance I heard a faint sound and made towards it. Presently, I began to recognize the noise. It was the screams of the unfortunate beings flying before the whips of the devils. I stopped. What should I do? I had no wish to suffer again that torment, and yet I dreaded solitude. However, I was not left long in doubt, for suddenly a herd of spirits came rushing out of the darkness pursued by their tormentors. Next moment I was caught by the crowd and had to rush with them. After being hunted for some time, I began to wonder whether I could not discover some method of escaping from these terrible whips. By my side was running a man. and at length I said to him as we stumbled along, "Look here, can't we get out of this?" "I would to God we could," he moaned. "Who's that using the name of God here?" "Take that, and that," screamed one of our tormentors, and at each word his fearful whip lashed us both. As we still ran on, I noticed that the ground seemed not merely rougher, but beyond this rough ground lay high cliffs with clefts and gullies in which we might hide. So we began to edge our way to that side of the herd. Presently I murmured to my companion, "Now." We raced for the shelter of the rocks. But at once one of the devils started in pursuit. It was a wild, desperate race, but of course we were recaptured. However, I shouted to my companion, "Call on God to help us, I find that even here he can." Then suiting my actions to my words I cried, "O God, help us, for Christ's sake." "Silence!" yelled our captor. "God cannot help you here. He is just. You have rejected him, and now he rejects you." "Silence! You cannot pray. If you try, he will not hear. He has other things to do than listen to traitors like you. Are there not enough souls not yet damned who need his aid that he should hearken to you? Back to the others." Again and again the terrible whip lashed our bodies. But still I prayed on. Soon, however, my companion lost heart and rushed back to the crowd, hoping amid the others to be partly protected from the blows of the lash. Almost at the same moment I perceived that a little nearer the cliffs was a black, shiny pool unutterably filthy. Without an instant's hesitation I plunged straight in. Whatever the substance was, it certainly was not the same tangible darkness I had experienced before in the division below. It much more resembled filthy water, thick and greasy with slime and dirt. I endeavored to swim across this, still for a while pursued by my tormentor, who lashed at me if ever I rose above the surface. Still calling upon God for help, I struggled on, and at length reached the further shore. At the foot of the high precipice I crouched and prayed desperately. Almost at once I saw a thin cord hanging round my waist. On looking closer I perceived it was a chain with many links, and as I studied them I knew they were the few good deeds I had ever, gone west 131, done. I had never noticed them before. But now, few as they were, they seemed to give me courage. An idea came floating into my mind, and even as it did so I again felt the lash of the pursuer. However, I paid no heed to it, but quickly unwound the chain, which I discovered was woefully thin, but at the same time much longer than I had expected. I formed one end into a noose, and studied the face of the cliff in spite of the blows which were continually being rained upon me. I soon perceived a horn of rock, as it were, which jutted out, and above it appeared to be a narrow ledge. After several efforts I succeeded in catching the noose over this horn and then began to climb up the chain, hand over hand. Every moment I feared it would break, but I kept on praying desperately, and it seemed as if the chain grew stouter as I did so. For a while the devil behind still lashed and struck, but after a time I appeared to climb out of his reach, and at length I scrambled onto the ledge, but I could see nothing because of the awful darkness. I looked next for the chain, but this too had vanished. For a time I gave myself up to despair, but after a while wiser thoughts prevailed, and instead of despairing, I knelt down and thanked God that he had helped me so far. Feeling calmer, I proceeded slowly on my way. The ledge was but narrow, and a false step would have meant a fall clean over the edge of the cliff. By degrees it grew a little broader, and soon I was able to walk along in comparative ease. "Well," I thought, "it just shows what can be done if one only has a strong will. Most men would have given up the task as hopeless, but I'm not of that type. Thank goodness, I have an iron will." This was no sooner thought than, catching my foot on a boulder, I pitched forward over the ledge. Down I fell with a fearful speed, but did not fall far, as I stuck head downwards in a narrow crevasse. It was only after many desperate struggles that I succeeded in freeing myself and painfully climbed up to the place from whence I had fallen. In a more chastened spirit I continued slowly on my way. At times the route was over bare screes, upon which I slipped and fell, at others over rough boulders and jagged rocks, while again at other times it was along a comparatively easy path. At length I came to the entrance of a cave and wafted in. It seemed, strange to say, less dark here than outside.